Cancer Rising, and welcome to Inner Space, your 2023 annual reading from Planet Waves. My name is Eric Francis, your astrologer for the next hour or so, here with the audio wrap session version of the reading. You have the more formal presentation in writing, and I'm here to basically just explain what I've been on about and have a second look at the chart. Generally, I don't refer back to the reading. I kind of do a fresh look at the chart. So there'll be some overlap and some things explained in a slightly different way. And there are some topics it's easier to just speak about than it is to write about. So here we are. First, two preface thoughts. One is just an acknowledgement of the incredible stress that many people are under of various kinds, this constant adaptation that we're now having to go through, financial stress that many people are in. But I think on top of it all, there is just this psychic pressure that is making it difficult, particularly for sensitive people, to get through the day. There is so much rank insanity being rained down on us. I have never been one to suggest unplugging, but commercial media seem like they're completely foregone, done. And even a lot of the private, you know, like one-person show kind of podcasts are broadcasting a constant paranoia without much in the way of action-oriented solutions and ways we can take care of ourselves better, ways we can make the world a better place. There just seems to be so much fear being advertised. The second is that I've pretty much made no secret of my concerns about the Pluto and Aquarius era. My reading in 2021 called The Great Reconciliation of Accounts and of Humanity about Pluto entering Aquarius, and this thing called transhumanism that has not been a thing for very long. We didn't really, I mean, I guess the $6 million man, that's a concept of transhumanism. Somebody with like a digital, computerized, super strength prosthetic devices, that was like the first ad. Steve Austin and then Jamie Summers came along as the bionic woman. Bionics is a form of transhumanism, but it's not the kind that I'm concerned about. The kind that I'm concerned about is the mental conversion of humans into essentially into devices that think robotically and have lost our capacity to feel and to experience emotion, and to be able to move outside the extremely rigid grid that living these digital lives is about. There are days, I don't know if you feel this way, where I must do most of my work on computer. I still run around with notebooks and pencils and books and clipboards with paper and read and write and scribble and sketch as much as I can. I'd like to work on paper, astrological charts. You can see I like to make my own charts up. But at the end of many days, I'm like, either I can't withdraw from the digital environment or I'm like, get me the fuck out of here. I can't stand being inside of this grid. And the fact that we are living completely submerged and swallowed by digital technology involving everything from pizza profiles to Easy Pass to the Covey Pass, Empire Pass, G20 digital vaccine passport, to every transaction being processed digitally, and so on and on and on, is troubling, and it is convincing us slowly that we are a kind of device. And you may not think, oh, I think I'm a device, but when you start to talk to your phone in phone talk, and are those days, you notice some where Siri just doesn't know what the heck you're saying, so you've got to start pronouncing your words, because, you know, you say, I went to the store, and it translates to, this establishment is such a bore. And then sometimes you send those. Well, when we're speaking to these devices, whether it's, you know, your phone company or whatever, the bank, we're conditioning ourselves to be like these things. And it has been a long, slow grind of getting us in line, and we are not done. And there have been several phases through astrological history where you could just watch the transits to Aquarius, which I will be talking about in a moment, Pluto in Aquarius. But let's talk about a couple of others. In the 90s, there was Uranus in Aquarius, and then there's been Neptune in Aquarius. And, you know, for example, when you look at the chart for when Steve Jobs walked out onto the stage and announced the iPhone, Neptune in Aquarius was rising. And so Aquarius, your eighth house, is one of the scenes of this massive electronic transhumanist takeover. The other one is Aries, another very important placement in your chart. And the damage has been done in other ways. That, you know, you could look at Pluto through Capricorn as part of this, because it's taken apart the brick and mortar world. You could look at Uranus through Taurus as shaking up the physicality and sensuality of Taurus and injecting it with electronic consciousness in the form of Uranus, the planet associated with the advent of electricity in the late 18th century. But here we are, and we're going deeper into this, and the human race is about to experience a watershed that other people are talking about, but that really can only be described in this particular way in terms of the timing and the specific themes, rather than speaking in broad generalities by astrology. And in the spring of 2023, we all are heading into a watershed era, an era of rapid change. And that is described mainly by two transits. One is Saturn changing signs and going into Pisces. The other is Pluto changing signs and going into Aquarius. And the third, which is significant, even though Mars transits are not usually that important, Mars entering Cancer after this long stay in Gemini and making three different 90-degree aspects called squares to Neptune, which, if it's working, might be for some people, is about being in your integrity intellectually and in terms of your words, and learning how to be honest with yourself in ways that completely defy the ways that we're trained to exist at this time in history, where essentially everything is a mirage, an illusion of digital, an illusion of television. I flip through services like Netflix and Showtime and Amazon, and I am astounded at the number of TV series on these platforms. And there's others. There's Hulu and there's others. And they are all so vapid, 99% of them. But the vapid part aside, there is this pervasive living in fantasy, number one. And number two, the externalization of the imagination. This is really a creature of the television era, starting in the 1950s, but TV hijacked the inner sense of imagination. There's outer senses that Aristotle described: sight, sound, touch, smell, taste. And then there's the inner senses that Aristotle didn't describe, and that McLuhan, who is very concerned about the sensory ratios of the outer senses being warped by each new advent of technology, but he did not talk about the inner senses. The inner senses. And those are things like, I have like 10 pages of notes on this from a meeting with one of the most devoted McLuhan students alive, Mark Stallman. But one of them is common sense, the ability to reason out a problem on your feet, to know true from false. But more significantly, I think, is the externalization of the imagination. The imagination has been taken from us and put on a screen and pumped back to us. We also have the externalization of memory in the form of toting around these devices that hold all of our memories. I mean, there was a time as a child I knew every phone number. And now I know like 3 phone numbers, or 4, not including my own. So we are in this tremendous watershed era, which is the digital era. In my view, the single most important spiritual crisis that we face. All other problems that we are facing now are descendants of or creatures of the digital environment. And now Pluto is about to enter Aquarius. It is going to do so in a very sensitive angle of your chart, the eighth house. The eighth is one of the two most complex houses. In my view, those are the eighth, which is about transactions, monetary, sexual, wills, estates, trusts, dowries, inheritances, probates, and so forth. The other being the 12th, which is even more amorphous because it doesn't have those structures. You know, everything in the eighth has some form of a structure to it. The 12th just washes away all that structure. We're going to talk about the 12th because you've got Mars about to wrap up its retrograde in Gemini, your 12th. And I am concerned about this Pluto transit through Aquarius, and Cancer has it in one of the more challenging positions because there's already such an obsession with power wielded in the 8th. As an astrologer, I have worked with way too many people involved in legacy dramas with their siblings, for example, stealing their inheritances. This is just the thing to do, I guess, these days. So it is already the scene of much anguish and difficulty. The other thing about the 8th and the style that you have it, which is Aquarius, is that the 8th house is the house of the values of other people. And the 8th is where we have to share resources with partners, and also where their influence can be very, very strong over us. All of this seizure of power, but there's an additional complication in that the eighth represents the values of other people and their value, as Lily said in the first translation into English, death, dowry, and the substance of the bride, etc. That's the eighth, as he described it. Aquarius is the sign that you have in your eighth place. And what happens with Aquarius is that a lot of people think they have the right to make some kind of a decision for us, or to be the consensus or majority rule with which we must reckon, and that's it. People take a vote, or not even officially take a vote. There's just a social pattern crystallized, and we have to live with it. Unless you have the strength of character and you've done sufficient work self-actualizing to have built up the individuality to be able to stand up to these people. And when Pluto arrives in March, this is game on. And there's a number of possible manifestations that Pluto, through Aquarius, through your eighth, can take. One of which is that, you know, you will be subject to that power of Pluto from somewhere else. Another possibility with Pluto in the eighth is somehow finding yourself into an unexpected status of wealth you were not expecting to be in or could never imagine to have happened. And the other, I think, from the standpoint of what you can do, is that Pluto, though it will give others some power over you, potentially, that will only really work if you are either cooperative or out of integrity. And so the way to stand up to this whole environment of the eighth house is to be in integrity. By that, I do not mean to act like you're a good person. I mean having your accounting books in order and your taxes filed. I mean only having sex with the right people. I mean being truthful with partners and learning how to stand up to other people who are claiming some kind of influence over you. They may just think is very lovely for them to have that influence. And you are going to have to be your own person under the power of this transit. And the strange thing about Aquarius on the 8th is that normally the 8th already has a lot of people in it. My old girlfriend in Germany, Maria, when I was teaching her astrology in the 1990s, I'm always a careful teacher of the eighth house, and I lifted off all the issues, and she said, "Wow, this is a really crowded house." And so the crowded house became my kind of like keywords for the eighth. But you have Aquarius in the crowded house, it's an even bigger crowded house, and this can open you up to a collective view imposing itself on you that far exceeds the normal purview of the eighth being in-laws and so forth, but rather a much wider, kind of population of influence on you. And so I want to caution you about that and let you know that this is happening. And I think that you have every capacity you need to, at least in potential, to work with this transit. You have lived through many transits of slow-moving planets through your eighth. You've lived through Uranus and Neptune and Chiron and just recently Saturn. And so you have practice here. But the thing is that a lot of people will kind of cash in their need to stand up for themselves because they aren't strong enough when the chips are really down. They'll go so far, and then they'll comply because their child wants them to, or their spouse wants them to, or their parent forces them to, so-called, there's no gun involved, but there is that implied threat of something I'm not sure what. And, you know, remember that no one's making you do something unless they're threatening you with a weapon or with arrest. So I would be extremely mindful of the use of the word made me do it. But people try. They try to influence people and feel like it's their prerogative. And there's an even worse thing going on, in my judgment, and that is the acquiescing to this kind of false collectivism that's become so popular. And I would propose that you go back to March of 2020 and replay all of that. And I realize that there is a kind of a memory hole for a lot of people there. It's a very painful time. I'm fortunate in that I have kept a day-by-day chronology of pretty much straight through 2020 and then going back quite a ways and accounting for all the important events of even of 2019 and 2018. So I have some sense of what was going on, but most people have just suppressed this. And I would encourage you to remember how you responded. What were your initial impressions? Did you at any point feel like, why am I being, quote unquote, made to do this? And then just threw it in. It's like, fuck it. I'm going to go along with this. I can't stand the pressure. All these other people are wearing masks. I think it's the stupidest thing in the world to cover my face. But I can't stand the way that they're all looking at me when I walk around the grocery store. Without my face covered. And rather than assuming that the motives were valid or that the method, cover your face, was valid, the question is how you responded to the pressure to conduct yourself a certain way. Did you question? Did you stand up? Did you speak out? Did you have the guts to go against the group and play back those scenes? They're not over yet. Saturn is still in Aquarius. But Saturn has a kind of a soft touch compared to Pluto. Saturn has been preparation for the presence of Pluto. And it's, you know, sort of uniquely coincidental. Well, these kind of synchronicities happen in astrology, that just when Saturn leaves Aquarius, Pluto enters. This is in March. And there's fortunately going to be a phase-in period of Pluto into Aquarius. There's going to be three ingresses. Usually there's only two. Usually Pluto goes in, retrogrades out, goes back in, and stays for the full duration in the sign. With Pluto now slowing down to 21 years, through Aquarius, which is very different than the, like, 15-ish years of Capricorn, or even less, going back to Scorpio and Sagittarius. This is a transit that is going to mean business. And this pressure from the collective to act certain ways, to believe certain things, and in the spirit of the eighth, to submit to external values that are not yours and that you don't support and don't stand up to, but all these other people are doing it. My question is, how do you handle this? How have you handled this in the past? And how would you handle it if the pressure was even stronger? Because it's likely to be. There are all kinds of changes coming to the financial structure of the world. They really are planning to go to a central bank digital currency and eliminate money. Therefore, every single transaction is going to be taxed, a bank fee, a transaction fee. They're going to bite 2% out every time that $100 changes hands, which has not happened with a $100 bill. And the digitization, the eighth, by the way, very important financial house. It's the house where we transact financial activities with the outer world. And so there is a lot of imposed power coming. And I think that it is particularly crucial that you learn to stand up to this, to stand up on your own, and to be determined to retain control over your own resources to the greatest possible degree that you can be in this time when our own resources, the paycheck that you deserve because you worked, or the commission check you deserve because you sold that house or whatever, is being weaponized against us. And so my bottom line assessment here is that Pluto, through Aquarius, is going to require you to be a person of the utmost integrity and personal dignity and self-respect, and to pluck up the courage to tell people, I don't agree with this approach you're taking, or in the case of it not mattering, to do what you can to figure out how to maintain your independence through this is to the greatest extent that you can, however that might look. And this is a 20-year transit. It is a transit for the foreseeable future. I will be nearly 80 years old when it's over. A kind of a crazy idea. Now, you have also been through, we'll wrap up with Pluto here and take a little break. Among the, you know, I listed off all these other transits through your eighth, and those are meaning pretty much every outer planet has been through your eighth, assuming that you're, you know, over, not even that old. I mean, the big action in Capricorn was in 93, and then the conjunctions of Neptune and Uranus, and then those move into Aquarius and wear off. And so that included Chiron, Uranus, Neptune, Jupiter, Saturn, all fairly recently been through your eighth house. So you have practice, thankfully. Now, most recently, you have lived through Pluto through your seventh, Capricorn. And Capricorn and Cancer are an excellent pair of sign opposites. Cancer and Capricorn, right? Signs, not planets. Cancer is a sign that cycles a lot. It's ruled by the moon. And so it is subject to the tides and ebb and flow of, various different things. But mostly, it cycles like the moon. That finds its answer in Capricorn, which is the stalwart, stable, institutional, predictable, traditional sign where things are not supposed to change that much. This is your relationship house. It is about potential partners of any kind, and partners, whether business or romantic, that's consummated in the eighth. When you get into the eighth, then it becomes a money thing. But the partnership itself is a seventh house thing. And what Pluto has done here is dismantled the structure that you have depended on for relationships for a long time. And this was an inevitable process. I mean, Pluto was coming. It was going to get there eventually, and it got there, and it did its thing. And so you're not able to rely on the structure of relationships quite like you were in previous times in your life. The seventh is also about open enemies. And Pluto, through here, has likely seen some episodes of some kind of assault, stalking, harassment, a lot of possibilities. It's not that the entire 15 years of Pluto through Capricorn was about those things, but it is probable that something like that happened. The diversity of possible times when it did, but there's quite a bit of protection afforded to you by Capricorn, and to some extent Pluto moving through Capricorn has worn that down and made it difficult for you to have that structure that that you can stand up to. Now Aquarius also, in the next house where Pluto's going, provides a structure, and that is a social structure. And one of the most important things that you can do in preparation for Pluto and Aquarius is to know who your friends are and know who your friends aren't. Friends have a quality of dependability. They will have a willingness to offer themselves, and they can do so in a way that does not reward them in any way, or they just simply have the satisfaction of being there for you. And if you ask yourself how many people like that you have in your life, the chances are not very many. And additionally, there is the matter of the social network with Aquarius that is a little bit different from friends. It's more like, you know, friends and associates, and friends and associates of those people that can create a kind of a structure around you that allows you to have a kind of a filtration process for things getting into your life and people. Pardon me, I'm dealing with a little bit of bronchial stuff, not at an opportune time. With 8.5 of these readings left to go, but I'm going to just keep breathing and work my way through it. Okay, so that's my commentary about transhumanism, Pluto and Aquarius, commentary on Pluto having been through Capricorn. The most important thing you can do is surround yourself with people where there is a true mutual network of support. This is indicated by factors in the seventh and the eighth, both Cupido, for example, a very important hypothetical point that's in Capricorn, is saying, gather your true family around you. They're not necessarily blood relatives. Some might be. But bring together the people who are the ones you have a track record with, people who have done you right, and where there is a shared reality field of ethics. All right, let's take a short musical break. I'm going to make some hot tea and come right back, and we will continue. There's really a few topics I want to cover. One is the end of Mars retrograde, the associated activity in Aries, which Mars rules, and I want to talk about Venus retrograde in the second, and the eclipses. So I'm going to pick the pace up a little bit. I've kept it very slow and meticulous going through. This everything fits these same approximate themes. You can take anything I'm saying and say, okay, how does this How does this story align with this whole business about big tech making us all want to run around with QR codes tattooed onto our hands, or biometrics? You know, that we now get around by shoving our finger into everything, and we no longer go to the doctor or the health center or the healer. Just spit in this little cup connected to the iPhone, and then a prescription comes out. This is the question to ask pretty much anytime, every time you're doing anything. Keep count in your day of the things that are not specifically tracked by a computer. Okay, back in a moment. So let's begin with Mars retrograde and take that up to Aries and a little bit about Scorpio. Since Mars rules Aries and Scorpio, it also rules a bit of Capricorn because it's exalted in Capricorn. So Mars is a very influential planet and grossly misunderstood and a bit underappreciated. Mars is the essence of motivation. I think that this God of War thing is bullshit. Yes, it's a kind of a reference in classical mythology and all that stuff. But the idea here is that both Mars and Aries are sources of initiative, doing things because you say it's time to do them, not needing to be told to do things. And you are very fortunate to have fire sign Aries as your 10th place. Fire sign Aries is 10 signs from Cancer, and so therefore it represents high aspirations, and represents reputation and your response to power and how you want to be known, and also what you're in charge of. And when you're not in charge, who's in charge of you and how you deal with them? All right, just putting Jupiter into this chart here. Because Jupiter's now there. So there's a lot going on in Aries, but with Jupiter, Salacia, Chiron, and Eris all in Aries right now. We'll be Jupiter is going to blow through in about 4 months. It's going to be a good 4 months there of Jupiter and Aries. I think all other things aside, all things being equal, if the world still exists and all that, and the banks are still open. This is a perfectly excellent transit for you because you are going to be visible in the necessary ways and will have the benefits of your own leadership. But first, let's consider Mars retrograde in Gemini. So Mars rules those three signs, Capricorn, Aries, and Scorpio. I think for our purposes, Aries is the most important one to consider. and it's retrograde and been in your 12th and been retrograde in your 12th for months. And that's Gemini, and the 12th is like this lost zone. You know, we've all had the experience of finding the lost wristwatch in the couch cushions. You look for the wristwatch 100 times, checked every pocket, didn't find it. Completely have the car detailed. Evacuate the glove compartment. Nah, it's in the couch cushions. That's the 12. Things disappear there. Sometimes they're found. Sometimes they're not. People can go missing in the 12th. Important placements like moon or sun can represent missing elements of parents in the 12th. If you have it in your natal 12th. Second most complicated house, but I think more interesting than the transactional 8th house. Because it brings in this dimension of the dimensions. Now, the 12th is also about fear. So there has been a process of overcoming fear with Mars in the 12th. And I think this is one of those factors that is going to stand out perhaps a bit more for Cancer rising. But then that really doesn't hold up to experience, because it seems to me the solar chart and the natal chart work equally well, and they work in parallel and often giving same or similar messages. And it is interesting to have Gemini in the 12th, because Gemini itself insinuates the mystery of the other, the missing dimension of the other. So there's already something that can kind of get tucked in to like the string theory 15th dimension in the 12th house. But when you put it in the Gemini, but you put it in the 12th, then it's like, you know, where am I? However, this more translates to, am I confronting my fears? And am I confronting the inherent dualism of my consciousness? In a way, I think Gemini is the appropriate sign to have on the 12th, because it speaks to the issues of the 12th so well. And it translates them into the human terms of Gemini. But in any event, there's a lot of reconciliation going on with this transit. And one of the most important points of reconciliation is your lived inner reality as contrasted with the thing that Neptune is making its series of squares to, which is the thing that Mars is making its series of squares to, which is Neptune in the ninth. And so there's this question here of, does my actual experience of my unconscious mind, the thing that bubbles out in dreams and that you know, the things you might think about if you take a couple of hits of good weed or mushrooms or ayahuasca, all of those are 12th house experiences. Any form of a non-ordinary state of consciousness, visions and things like this, are all 12th house things. How does that stuff bubbling around there, which is often kind of a bit off to the side, it's sort of curled in and not generally accessible, but now you're kind of getting the whole thing dropped into the deep fryer with Mars there, so you can hear it sizzling. How does that comport with my idealistic sense of my spirituality? If your spirituality has you as like an excellent person with like, you know, very good integrity, and you're very monogamous, and you're, then what do you do about that 12th house kind of fantasy of wanting to fuck five guys at once? Which, when you leave it behind, it kind of stays in the 12th. The 12th is a little bit like Vegas. But then it comes up again, right? Then it's like, you know, 9 o'clock on Saturday night, you take a couple of hits of cannabis indica and you're like, woohoo. And then like your mind starts to go and the 12th house opens up and all of this stuff and this hidden sixth dimension of string theory comes unfurling out. And there's this other being, this other state of mind of the 12th house, which might have absolutely nothing to do with the you know, goody-goody idealism of your normal spirituality, Pisces on the 9th. And by the way, though I can't go into it too much, I talked about it in the written, your spiritual sense is going to focus under the power of Saturn in the 9th. It's going to be very helpful. I think that Saturn in the 9th, Saturn entering Pisces, your 9th, is going to be an answer to the amorphous kind of slightly idealistic, delusional denial of Neptune in the 9th. And what is going to be very helpful is that for the duration of Neptune's transit through the 9th and Pisces, Saturn will be there, catching up with it. That the catching up happens around 2027 with a conjunction smack in the first degree of Aries, a momentous time. It's going to be worth moving through the bullshit of our times. All right, let's talk about the 10th. The 10th is the thing of which Mars is a creature for you. It is very fortunate that you have Aries on the 10th, your house of career, reputation, motivation, authority, and all that, because you inherently seek to self-actualize in the 10th. I believe, it's my observation, from having read thousands of natal charts, perhaps 10,000 mundane charts, and then doing all of these readings that I do with these charts I make up, these written charts where I read for the sun signs and all the horoscope columns, Aries is where we seek self-actualization inherently, wherever it is. If you're Scorpio, you've got it on the 6th. If you're you work is very important, as it is for you, because the 10th is about another kind of work. If you're a Gemini, you would seek that self-actualization in the 11th, social society. Oh, that's shocking. Why are Gemini so social? Well, they like to chit-chat with each other. Little two little twins have their secret language. But also, Gemini will seek to self-actualize in the 11th house, where there's going to be a bunch of people and a little party or a big party. You have it on the 10th. You care about how you're known. You want to be known for the right thing. And I think you understand that you're in a position of leadership, whether you got elected or not, or elected yourself or not. That's just how it is. The most important operative factor in the 10th for you is Chiron. This transit is less than half over. It began in 2018. I'm a little attached to Chiron transits sticking around. And fortunately with Aries, we get the longest of all of them. It's 9 years. For contrast, Chiron moved through Libra in the 90s in 18 months. And it's moving through Aries in our times in 9 years. That's how strange the orbit is. By strange, I mean elongated, elliptical. Okay, so this is redoubled. The effect of Aries is the 10th as the point of self-actualization, as the point of being in and with and using your power responsibly, all forms of power, and recognizing the extraordinary urgency of you're setting the right example for people. And to me, the right example means not being a hypocrite and telling the truth, closely related. So Jupiter sweeps through here. It arrived on the 19th. It's now the 23rd. That was a whole 4 days ago. It's going to go through May 16th, and then it's going to get to Taurus. And there it will stay in Taurus through late May of 2024, which transit culminates with a fantastic meeting of Jupiter and Uranus in Taurus in your 11th in April of 2024. There's definitely a pot of gold at the end of this kind of seemingly monochrome rainbow that we are living through. And I feel so strongly about never making promises that I can't keep as an astrologer, but I feel like this is one that is fully substantiated by your astrology, and that is that you will be rewarded for your integrity. Therefore, put everything into your integrity. And remember that integrity is not about looking good. That's important. Lawyers lawyers have a code of ethics that says they have to have the appearance of propriety. Right? I'm a journalist. I can hang out with drug dealers and prostitutes if I want to. Not so an attorney unless he's representing them. I'm not talking about the appearance of propriety here. I am talking about meaning, what you make down to your bones. I'm talking about the total commitment to living, speaking, and acting your truth and going through that grappling process, that challenge, that difficulty of figuring out what is right and what is true. And this is, to my astrological ear, a lot of what Mars in Gemini making this series of squares to Neptune, this working it out, determining what is actually true, not pretending, not assuming. And when this is over, Mars comes into your sign in March. And this is the power boost. It is the motivational point of contact. It is an integration point between the affairs of the house 10 or place 10, Aries, aspiration, reputation, power, authority, house 5, your creative abilities, and partnership, 7th house. Okay, a couple of more topics. There is a fabulous Venus retrograde coming up. Venus is retrograde, the least of all the planets. I think something like 8% of the time it's retrograde in Leo once every 8 years. Venus has this marvelous, impeccable retrograde pattern where it traces out a slowly drifting five-pointed star in the heavens. It's really, Google the thing, see if you can find it. It's absolutely wonderful, and it's why the pentagram, or I guess the pentacle, whichever has the thing pointing up, right? Not the two, if you believe that symbolism, and it would make a difference whether it's right side up or upside down. Same as with the swastika. It's a symbol of peace, flipped one way, and then it's the symbol of the Nazis flipped the other way. And the pentacle is a similar thing. This is a natural shape born out of something like the 72-degree pattern that Venus moves in. So anyway, Venus shows up in your second. This is the house of resources. It's the house of self-esteem. It's in my view, and I'm about, all I really have left is to write this part of Pisces in the written part. In my perspective, someone now who's getting on in the years, is that it is the mediating factor of reality, how you feel about yourself. I'm a student of South Park, and I don't know if you know this series, and for some people who have slightly more, you know, refined values, it could take a little bit of getting used to till you realize what they're making fun of. And there's this character, Eric Cartman, who, as the series morphs over its like 25 years, he becomes increasingly sociopathic. He starts like as a frustrated kid who wants his own way, and he's going to eat the whole chocolate cake, and he's fat and all this stuff. But the thing about Cartman is, almost always, he gets beat up a couple of times. He pushes it too far. But almost always, he gets away with it, and he wins over the very authority figures who can't get a handle on him, who he would get over on. And the reason I think this is of all the parents in South Park, he has a mother, he's just a mom, there's no the, nobody knows who the dad is, and his mother is a very sweet woman, but her job is crack whore. She's on the cover of Crack Whore magazine at one point in like season two. But of all the parents in South Park, she loves her son unconditionally, unequivocally, despite all of his bullshit. And so this affords him a kind of very unusual self-esteem that in some ways can only come from being loved by your parents. And those people who have, which is most of us, tenuous relationships with our parents where the love was in some way conditional, don't have this. We have to make up for it in other ways. So here you have the very parental sign Leo, very fatherly, and you have this goddess figure. I didn't mention the part about Venus makes the pentacle, and that's why Venus is the goddess of the goddess religion. So Venus is going to show up in Leo and spend 4 months there, usually might spend about 3 weeks. And Leo is your sign of self-esteem, second house. The quality that mediates everything. Now, people can succeed having been severely abused, and they generally are doing it to win the love of their parents. Sting gave a very touching commentary on this many years ago, where he said, "The reason I'm so famous is because I was trying to impress my parents." You are going to get a burst of the power of self-esteem this year. And I will tell you that of all the signs to have on your second, Leo is one of the very best. The water signs have an advantage here because for water sign Cancer, you have Leo on the second. Water sign Pisces has Aries on the second. Water sign Scorpio has Sagittarius on the second. And so the water signs all get a fire sign as their sign of self-esteem. They also get a fire sign as their sign of work. They get a fire sign as their sign of reputation and authority. So there's a little bit of a cosmic joke in there, because the world is not an easy place for water sign people. But you get an edge because you have the capacity to be fiery in the appropriate situation, in the appropriate condition. So remember that all of your success is going to be mediated by how you feel about yourself. Therefore, do everything you possibly can to, yes, be scrupulous and integrity, but to be your own biggest fan and cheerleader. And, you know, reward yourself for your successes. Period. Eclipses. I've kind of left the eclipses out of the verbal readings till now, but the eclipse pairs are moving from the eclipses, of course, drift backwards. I'm studying the history of physics, and the mapping out of the solar system by dumbass Westerners, the Mayans had it figured out, but you know, by us lunks here, was based on two things. Mars retrograde. This is what gives Copernicus the clue that the sun is in the center of the solar system. He studied Mars retrogrades and figured it out, which we're having now. And the other was figuring out why the eclipses involve the sun and the moon but do not happen on either the solar cycle or the lunar cycle. There's another cycle, the eclipse cycle, which involves the lunar nodes. Anyway, this drifts backwards. It runs in approximately a 9-year cycle, and the eclipses now this year are going to take place in four signs. They're going to take place in Libra, Scorpio, Aries, and Taurus. And they're moving retrograde toward the beginning of Aries. I wonder if I closed up that window. Yeah, I did. There's a lot of kind of, let's say, creative stimulation, and then this moves into, as the eclipses tighten up against your 10th house cusp, and points of no return, and kind of these thresholds, but will have an amplification effect, an empowering effect, basically decide what you want to be known for and make sure it's the thing you want to be known for, because you, whatever you choose, you will be. You have tremendous manifestation power the way that the eclipses are positioned in your chart. And the way we bring it up mainly for the first time in Cancer, because your sign is ruled by the moon. And so there's no slow moving planet really associated with the moon. The closest we come is Jupiter exalted in Cancer. But what we do get is the eclipse cycle. And so if you're a kind of a personal student of astrology and you just like the stuff and you want to learn as much as you can, as a Cancerian of any stripe, sun, moon, or rising, the thing to do is really keep your pulse on the solar and the lunar cycle, the changing of seasons, how the new moons and full moons happen, to be with them when they happen, and then become a student of eclipses, how you feel around them, how they, how you experience them, the kinds of things that happen. But I would be cautious of one thing. If you open any old astrology book, and I would imagine certain new ones about eclipses, they really didn't understand it. And they had a kind of a self-perpetuating negative view. And you can flip open an astrology book to eclipses and you can read about locusts and pestilences. And yeah, weird things happen. You know, weird things happen. But I view them more as leverage points. I view them more as times when your power concentrates and you can get into low gear and just drive right up the hill. Okay, I think that is what I have to say to you. And of course, we'll be developing these ideas in the weekly and monthly horoscopes, which are pretty much all based on the research I do for the annual edition. And it's been a pleasure doing this reading, and I am looking forward to getting it into your hands as soon as possible. Thank you again for doing business with Planet Waves. And from my heart to yours, the things I appreciate more than the fact that somebody might spend money on the work that I'm doing, it is the offering of your trust and your time. Because I think those are two things far more precious than money. If you have questions, drop me an email or add a comment, and one way or the other, it will get to me. All right, wishing you very happy season, and I'm doing this some hours, not long after the Capricorn new moon in your opposite sign. Very, very exciting new moon event at about 5 o'clock this morning, Eastern Time, working on the 23rd, Christmas Eve. And that's it. Lots of love. And bye for now.